Welcome to this first edition of Ecotones, a program that focuses on interesting people, groups, organizations, and communities in the Gallatin Valley. I'm Joy LaClaire. Our guest today on Ecotones is Bozeman High School freshman Seda Schumann. We first learned about Seda from an article published June 21, 2018 in the Bozeman Daily Chronicle by Gail Schanzler, headlined, Bozeman Girl Wins History Award for Korea Documentary. It reported that Seda Schumann, who was then an eighth grader at Sacagawea Middle School, had won the U.S. Marine Corps History Award at the 2018 National History Day competition for her documentary, Defining Korea, How Conflict and Compromise Shaped a Nation. Intrigued, I clicked on the link to see it for myself, and I was amazed at the quality and sheer amount of information artfully presented in just under 10 minutes, including historical facts, discerning explanations of ideological points of view, interviews with local veterans from that conflict, and in-depth exploration of very difficult material. I just had to find out more about the person who produced this film. It took much of the summer. Seda is a very busy young lady. But we finally sat down together at her home on August 22, 2018 for this interview. She told me she was awarded the U.S. Marine Corps History Prize, sponsored by the United States Marine Corps Heritage Foundation. Dr. Kathy Gorn, the director of National History Day and a representative from the foundation, presented the award. The actual awards ceremony was at the University of Maryland campus in the Xfinity Center, which she said is pretty similar to the field house at MSU. Her mother traveled with her. At the local level, she received the Future Leaders of Montana Scholarship, sponsored by the Great Adventure Foundation. This award was given to the best entry in the junior division, grades 6 through 8, and put $1,000 toward her trip for the national competition. Seda has graciously allowed us to broadcast the audio of her documentary, which will follow the interview. It can stand alone, but listeners are encouraged to find the link at Ecotones on the kgvm.org website to view it for themselves. Or you can just go to YouTube and type in Seda Schumann. That is spelled S-A-D-A-S-C-H-U-M-A-N-N. I assure you, it is well worth the effort. And a word about National History Day. According to their website, National History Day is a nonprofit educational organization that promotes the teaching and learning of history in middle and high schools around the world through a variety of programs for teachers and students. The largest program is the National History Day Contest. Established in 1964, the National History Day Contest encourages more than 500,000 middle and high school students to conduct original research on historical topics. Students present projects at the local and affiliate levels, and then the top two projects from each category are invited to the Kenneth E. Baring National History Day Contest at the University of Maryland at College Park. And now, our interview with Seda Schumann.
Why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself, or what grade you were in when you did this, what grade you're going into?
Well, first of all, I did not win first place in my category, but I did win the award for the U.S. Marine Corps History, which is a special prize, so it's not exactly winning the competition, but it's winning a certain special award, as they call it. So, my name's Seda. I am 14. I was in 8th grade when I competed at the National Competition of National History Day, and I also competed in 7th grade and qualified for nationals, but I did not advance to the finals or win anything in 7th grade.
Before you go on, what was the topic of that entry in the medium?
I competed in junior individual documentary both years, and the title of my piece was Minnie Two Shoes, Activist and Journalist. She was a Native American activist from the Fort Peck Reservation here in Montana.
So you were in 8th grade. Eighth grade at what school?
At Sacagawea Middle School in Bozeman.
So you already knew about History Day from seventh grade, and I guess you were pretty excited about it since you joined it again, and you already knew how much work was involved because you had done it in seventh grade. I'm curious how you went about choosing your topic.
Well, I thought a very long time about my topic. After I came back from the national competition in seventh grade, I automatically had a bunch of different ideas of what I could do from watching the other documentaries that did make finals. And I was very unsure what I was going to do. I had kind of a mental list of what would be the perfect topic, supposedly. And so I went through a bunch of different options, and eventually I did find the Korean War, which I was afraid was a little too broad and general, but I didn't know very much about it. It's one of the wars that isn't really recognized as much, and one of the people I interviewed in my documentary, he was actually a little unsure of why he was fighting, and I feel like that's kind of why the Korean War was so interesting. I knew it was a war that we were entered in. I wasn't really sure why or who was involved, and so after doing a little bit of research, I found that there were all of these layers and aspects of the Cold War that played very heavily into that conflict. And that's why I chose the topic originally, and because it was so relevant to today, of the summit with North Korea happening. I think it was when I was in DC competing. And so it was just incredibly relevant and had all of these deeper connections that I found very, very interesting.
Would you say your approach was finding out to answer your own curiosity?
Definitely. One of the things that National History Day does so well is it provides a platform that you can ask a lot of questions. And that's how I went about my research, was making a list of very general and very specific questions that I didn't know that I wanted to know, and that's, I created my project off of that, of taking notes to answer those questions, and then putting words, finding a way to answer them.
So what was your angle? Tell the listeners what the title of your documentary is, and how you came to make that your angle.
The title of my documentary is Defining Korea, How Conflict and Compromise Shaped a Nation. And every year in National History Day, there is a theme that you have to incorporate into your project, and this year's was conflict and compromise. And I found that there were so many parts of conflict and compromise that were in the Korean conflict, and chose to really focus on the communist and kind of anti-communist movements of the time, which is where I found it was most apparent. It really kind of started right after World War II, and developed into kind of a United Nations or primarily American-led movement versus the USSR and China, which there was a lot of conflict kind of coming out of that, and Korea was kind of a physical manifestation of that. But what was also really interesting to me was how the Korean culture was shaped kind of through that tug of war. They started as a unified nation and then were split, and then there's been talk of eventual reunification, and how all of that is a bunch of compromises between the two sides and conflicts that tear the nation apart and put it back together, maybe. And so that's kind of the angle I took, was how these two different forces really shaped a peninsula that seemed to be almost caught in between those two sides.
And of course, technically, the war is not ended yet. Do you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so another part that really interested me was, it was definitely a compromise that so-called ended the Korean War. It wasn't a full-on resolution. Basically, what the North Korean and South Korean sides during the war agreed upon was that they made a border and agreed to stop fighting, basically. It wasn't a peace. It wasn't a full-on resolution of, okay, we're okay, we'll stop fighting. It's just, we're tired of the war and efforts of this, so we're going to stop fighting. Not that we've really reached an agreement.
I listened to your video without looking at the images to find out if it would work as a radio piece, and I found that it does. And I was wondering if you would give KGVM permission, in conjunction with this interview that we're doing now, to actually broadcast the audio of the video And we will put the link to watch the video on the website so listeners can see for themselves the magnificent job you did. Well, let's backtrack a little. So when did you actually begin the hands-on end of the project, not counting what the time it took you to figure out what you wanted to do, but when you actually started doing it, when was that? When was the deadline to submit, and how long did it take you to get from point A to point B?
Well, I worked on this project the majority of last year. It was a class project originally, but you had the option to compete, and the requirements for National History Day were higher than that of my classroom. So I began in about October, actually doing the research and taking notes and writing. And in order to make the state competition, I had to have a put-together piece that was ready for state around April 8th, April 8th, 7th or 8th. And so I actually was stapling my bibliography and papers together the night before, which is probably a bad habit of mine. But yeah, so I worked from about October to April. And then, of course, after state, I was able to use my feedback from the judges to get an even better version to go to nationals.
Sadie, you mentioned that this was actually a class project. The whole class had to do something, but not necessarily up to History Day standards. So which class was that, and who was your teacher?
That was my social studies class at Sacagawea with Doug Kraft. And we had an option to do different projects. And as I knew I wanted to compete again in National History Day, I used the class time to work toward that end goal and presented to my class for that grade.
Let's talk a little bit about National History Day requirements. Many listeners may never have even heard of National History Day. You chose a video medium, but what other choices does a student have?
So in the National History Day competition, you have a choice of five different types of projects you could make. You could write a paper, a website, a performance, an exhibit, which is kind of like a science fair board, or a documentary, which I did.
You've decided that you want to do something about Korea. You've decided you want to use the video medium for a documentary. Then what did you do? I mean, that's kind of like a direction, but there's so many ways to go there. Was it difficult to choose where to go with that?
It was definitely very difficult. In the beginning, I got very lost in all of the information that I could find, because one thing that I really like about history is how everything connects to everything else. How if you look into one topic, you're suddenly looking into dozens of other topics that are related to that, and how everything connects and is a result of other things in the past, or even connects to the present. And I started doing very in-depth research about the end of World War II and how that kind of led into the Korean conflict, which you want to do, but I also couldn't find how I could fit all of that in a 10-minute documentary. And so one thing I really learned in that stage was how to find necessary amounts of background information that you can really know your topic, but not so much that it's overwhelming.
And how did you go about doing that preliminary research?
I generally start off with looking at the secondary sources. It gives pretty good overviews just to kind of know my topic a little bit better. And that's, as I was saying, that's where I kind of went into the preliminary stages of drafting out questions that I wanted to answer. And then I kind of used that to take notes based on certain sources. And once I had an idea of what I was looking at, then I was able to dig into the primary sources and videos of Truman and government documents, which really allows my own analysis of it, of not seeing what other people have written, but looking at what actually happened and what people said and kind of forming my own opinions based off of that, which is the other really interesting part of history, is you can look at all of these primary sources of the documents and the people and videos of war and other things and make your own opinions and use that to tell a story and getting the certain angle that you want.
So not everyone knows what you mean when you say primary and secondary sources. What do you mean?
So for National History Day, you're strongly encouraged to have both secondary and primary sources, but the secondary sources would be what something
what somebody else has written on that subject who wasn't actually there or witnessing it. And then primary sources would include things like newspapers, government documents, interviews of veterans, photographs and videos from the event, or even sometimes around the time period of the event, things like that.
I have no idea how you went about, first of all, finding them and then getting permission to use them. That's an issue.
Yes, I was in contact with some librarians at the Library of Congress and people that work for certain video archives and things like that. And I think because my video is educational, I think I have some freedom as far as permission to use that, which is always nice. But yeah, one of the reasons I chose documentary was because the Korean War does have so much great war footage and videos and news coverage of the event, which really works in the documentary category because then you can use that instead of listening to myself talk all the time. You can use bits of that to help tell the story.
So you collect all of this material, then you have to edit it. So do you have any sense of, in terms of time, how much footage you had when you began the editing process?
Well, I was able to, at least the way I like to make videos is I make the script first so that I know kind of what I need. And then I'll go through and kind of draft out what I would like to see in that area. And then I'll go through and look through the archives and find things that work for that spot. So I found a lot of videos that sometimes I'll only use like a 5-second clip from, but I'm able to kind of cut that out and fit it in a certain spot beforehand so I don't just find a bunch of videos that work and then have to cut that down from there. I find that helps me keep organized, to have a goal of what I want to see and then try and find that. And there were certain parts, like trying to represent the very abstract idea of capitalism with a visual image or video was very, very difficult.
Well, I want to congratulate you actually on, first of all, addressing the issues of the conflicts between communism and capitalism. This is something that has been discussed and argued about for, well, centuries at this point, and it can be very contentious and very ideological. You managed to do a very credible definition, and I'm not even sure what the term is. Well, anyway, it was very balanced, very concise, and very clear. And for that alone, I think you deserve to win a prize. How did you synthesize the information you got on those things into such a short and illuminating explanation?
Well, thank you. As far as getting the more abstract ideas like communism and capitalism, kind of anti-communist side of things, I spent days researching, and that was another point in my research where I did get lost very, very easily, and I was very confused because communism alone is something you can research for years and still not know everything about. And so I worked very, very hard on finding a clear way and just kind of tried to show kind of the very basic principles of that ideology to simplify that aspect but still provide enough information that you kind of have an idea of what these two sides are fighting for. Yeah, so that was a very hard part in the research, and I tried to really simplify that as much as possible for, well, my own sanity and to help out the viewers and judges.
So you feature two veterans of the conflict, George Tate and Chuck Michael. How did you find them? How did you get permission from them to be included, and how did you go about interviewing them?
Well, I first found George Tate in an article in the paper, actually.
The Bozeman Daily Chronicle?
Yes. I first found George Tate from an article in the Bozeman Daily Chronicle mentioned his trumpet playing, and we saw that it said he was a Korean War veteran. And at this point, I was looking for some other primary sources, like interviews, that could really, first of all, get a more personal take on the war, which makes it a lot more interesting for me. And I feel like you get a very different angle when you're talking to people that were actually there as opposed to secondhand accounts or very kind of professional writings. And so we found him in the phone book and called him, and him and his wife were very gracious in welcoming me into their home to interview. And I had a list of questions, but I found that especially George was just very easy to talk to, and it was really just a conversation that was on film, and it was great because I learned so much about what it was like to be an actual person that was there and what it was like for those families at the time, too. And so they were very, very nice about talking to me and letting me use them in my documentary. And Chuck Michael, the other veteran that I interviewed, was also, he was one of my friend's grandfather, actually. And what we heard from the family was he didn't really talk about his experience there very much, which, I mean, it was very traumatizing, a lot of the things that those soldiers had to go through. And so that was a very different kind of environment, but I did learn kind of other angles on that, which was also interesting.
What kind of angles did you learn from? Was it Chuck that you learned the different angles from? Can you be more specific without breaking confidentiality or something?
Yes, both of the veterans I talked to didn't really see too much of a point in the war, which, when I looked back through my notes and sources, I could actually see, I could understand that. And so that was very eye-opening to me. Even the people that were over there fighting didn't know quite why they were there. And Chuck especially, I learned about kind of the hardships of the weather and just the physical pain of being in such a drastic climate out of Korea. Very, very hot in the summers and very, very cold in the winters, and sleeping in camps over there was clearly not enjoyable for anyone, it seemed. And so that was a different perspective, because from a lot of the newsreels, especially at the time, have very patriotic, we're going over here because we're Americans and we're going to fight. And then getting kind of a more real, in-touch perspective on the war was very eye-opening for me.
Did you find out how old each of them was when he was serving in that conflict?
I believe that Mr. Tate was a junior in high school, I believe. Which, yeah, I think that was, yeah, he was very young, and Mr. Michael was only a little bit older, I think, at that time.
So they were basically teenagers.
Yes, they were basically teenagers when they went over, which I think a lot of the troops that were sent over during that time were, because they were drafted into the war.
And were they Montanans at that time? They're local people now. Were they Montanans then?
Yes, both Mr. Tate and Mr. Michael were living in Bozeman at the time, and
so they were either going to Bozeman High or had graduated from, or had gone to Bozeman High, right?
Yes, they had both gone to Bozeman High. Oh, maybe not. I know for sure George was living in Bozeman, and Chuck might have been in different areas, but I think, I don't know.
Okay, well, now, one of the things that I found intriguing was the music that you used in your documentary. Would you please talk about that, how you went about selecting, and why you chose the pieces that you did?
It's kind of a funny story with the music, actually. The piece I selected from the beginning is actually a cello cover of the kind of pop modern song of Take Me to Church, which I never expected I'd use in a documentary on the Korean War. But I liked the sound of the cello because it worked with the emotions of kind of somber and mellow, but very kind of serious. And so that's kind of just what I heard when I listened to that piece. And I found that song, and what I did when I put together most of the music was I would have it open in a window on my computer and play the music and then play the documentary with it and see if it kind of worked together. And then I'd find a part of the song that I felt conveyed that certain emotion or mood that I wanted in that piece. So that was very interesting. And then I had another section where the conflict is kind of intensifying, where we're moving into kind of the middle of the war. And every time I kept picturing the song, we were actually playing in band with that, which was kind of funny. And I kept going, this is what I hear, so I want something that's very similar to that. And eventually I just played that song with the video, and it definitely conveyed the kind of slow intensity that I wanted for that piece in my documentary. And so that was just very interesting. And then the other part that the music really conveys is that culture in Korea. And so I tried to find some more traditional instruments and traditional sounds of Korea or Asia in general that kind of tied that together, which I also was able to find, and especially when I'm talking about the very beginning when Korea was taken into Japan, which then later in World War II, Japan fell, and then that was occupied by the Allied forces, which then left what will we do with Korea? And so especially when I was describing that kind of history of Korea as a culture, I was able to tie in the more cultural music that really creates... Music is a huge part in culture, and so that's one thing I love about the documentary, is you're able to get that piece in, which I feel like other mediums, arts, can't so easily incorporate.
Well, it certainly adds tremendous depth to the overall feeling that one has in viewing your documentary. So you mentioned band. What do you play?
Well, I play the oboe in band, and... Yeah, we were playing that song at the time, and it just kept coming back into my head when I was working on my documentary, and I was able to use it in my final piece.
I don't think we've mentioned yet that History Day is structured in basically two parts. There's the younger students and then the older students. Could you tell us which grades go in which segment?
Yes, so in National History Day, you can compete in two different divisions, the junior division or senior division, and junior is 6th through 8th, and I think sometimes students a little younger can also go in that category if they feel compelled, and then high school age of 9th through 12th grade goes in the senior division. And another thing about the structure is you can compete in the five different categories in either junior or senior, but you also have the choice to either work with a group or work individually. So I competed in junior, individual, documentary, which are all different choices, obviously, besides the age of which category I want to compete in.
So you'll be in 9th grade very soon. Well, actually, technically, you're in 9th grade now, right?
Yes.
So does that mean you'll be at the high school?
Yes. So I will be going to Bozeman High School this fall. And if I compete in National History Day, I'll be competing this year in the senior division, which means I will be the youngest in that age group that can compete.
What do you think the chances are, percentage-wise, that you will enter again? I mean, that would be the third year in a row, right?
Yes, that would be my third year. I love the competition and the motivation to do better than I did last year or make a project and learn more. Obviously, going into high school, there are harder classes, more things I can do, so I might not have time this year, but I hope to be able to in future years, even if that's not this year. Because even though it is senior division, I watched some, and some of the very high-level junior documentary are as good, if not better, than some of the documentaries I've seen in the senior division. And so I think age doesn't necessarily matter as far as competition odds. I mean, maybe just more writing experience or experience making documentaries in general could be helpful. But I have 2 years under my belt, which I've learned a lot just with the technology and strategies of choosing a good topic and how to effectively research and efficiently research, which that's one part I love of the competition of learning more, and especially it can be applied to so many things in life, in high school level projects and college level projects, of you need to be able to research and make things in a time limit, which I struggle with a lot, which is why National History Day has helped me grow so much, of learning how to make an actual project and just learning a bunch of skills about myself that apply to tons of other things in life.
I have been viewing documentaries as an interviewer for more than 10 years, and I've interviewed many magnificent directors, producers, writers, and I can say without qualification that your documentary is right up there with those I have seen done by professionals
with decades of experience in a much longer format than what you were restricted to. Your piece was, if I'm not mistaken, 9 minutes and 57 seconds. The amount of information and the quality, not just in terms of good quality, bad quality, but just in terms of depth and how user-friendly it was.
I'm just ongoingly astounded by that, Sita. I have to tell you that. And I'm so thrilled that you have done it and that you've granted me permission to interview you. And it really inflames hometown pride that you did this. I have to tell you that. Now that I've got the gush out of the way.
What do you know now about the process of doing a video, a documentary, that you wish you had known when you began? And it can be more than one thing.
There are a lot of things.
Well, just lay them out there, sister.
I learned a lot as far as technology. When I started in seventh grade, I created it in iMovie, which was very, very frustrating for me as far as making the actual video, because you can't do... I could visualize a bunch of all of these things that I wanted, but I couldn't get the software to actually do that, which I think this year I was able to do a lot better in a more complex program.
What program did you use this time?
I used Adobe Premiere this time, which is a lot more professional as far as being able to make things move precisely where you want them to and have things kind of fade and have multiple images on the screen at one point, which simply visually is a lot better for me to be able to actually see what I want to happen. And so as far as actually making the documentary, I also learned how to use visual elements and music to tell a story, maybe not as much as my narration, but definitely being able to incorporate the visual and audio elements to tell the story and use them as much as possible to aid my narration. Because that's what's unique to documentaries, especially in national history. If that's the category that I find, you can use everything you've got to make a point and analyze, incorporate the culture and all the different layers to any given event. Which is the part that's really fun for me, is using that creativity to be able to put together the different parts and kind of really just incorporate those layers.
And what advice would you have for particularly students in the junior category, since you are as experienced as you are, to encourage them to follow in your footsteps and build on what you've done?
Well, I do have to encourage National History Day. If you want a trip to DC, I guess, and just experience competing at a higher level, our state is very small, so just odds-wise, you do have a fairly good chance of making it to nationals. But in the project I had so long gone, really, first of all, topic choice is very, very important, and it's not something to necessarily stress about, but I think the top thing to consider is if it's something that interests you. I started research on several different topics in both years, and if you want to make a project, having something that interests you, because otherwise you're kind of having a groan of, ugh, I have to do this, as opposed to, now I'm on this path of research and I'm really curious. So that makes it a lot more enjoyable, and also utilizing as many sources as possible, especially finding local people that have knowledge on your event or were in that event. That also makes research a lot more interesting, is talking to people and finding people that can answer your very specific questions, as opposed to searching books and webs and trying to find the answers, and it makes it a lot more personal. Yeah, I think I'd highly encourage anyone that is even kind of interested to at least try a National History Day project, because it's such a fun process that you learn a ton, not only about your topic, but about yourself and about how to make a documentary or make a website, which is just a crazy thing that I guess I'm able to do now. It's just very entertaining, and it's a worthwhile experience.
So you learned all this about Korea,
And you presented at the state level at about the same time that the President of the United States was involved in a summit with the leader of North Korea.
That in itself was pretty amazing. The situation now, I wonder if you have thoughts about it, and if so, if you would share them with us.
I did do a lot of research into the current events because, again, those connections make it a lot more interesting, and you can follow just dozens of different paths. But as I was keeping up with the current events and researching the summit, it was very interesting how the South Korean president and North Korean,
how Kim Jong-un and the South Korean president and President Trump all kind of played a part in the potential for the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, perhaps reunification. I found how history really connects to that of these nations were once together and were kind of torn apart, and there are efforts to perhaps reunify that culture. I think very recently North and South Korean families have been reunited, and it really shows the conflict and compromise of, I say, how that's kind of more of a cycle than very linear event. And, I mean, especially with the threat of nuclear weapons, it seemed like that was leaning kind of more towards a potential global conflict that could be very destructive, but the leaders are working towards some kind of resolution or attempt at a resolution, which, looking at history, I'm a little hesitant to believe that that will work out, but we can hope that there will be some kind of peace there, especially to, I don't know, global peace seems like a great goal, and I think especially not having to get into nuclear warfare could save a lot of destruction. But especially in Korea, I think it will be a very long process if that's eventually going to happen because of North Korea's isolation. And I don't know, I'm a little hesitant to believe that that will be an easy peace to make, but hopeful that someday we will be able to kind of make peace and fix, quote-unquote fix, what was destroyed, I guess, in the Korean War and after World War II in that area.
Are there any other ideas that you would like listeners to know about? And it doesn't necessarily have to be about the documentary, but your life in general or wherever you want to go with it.
Whole list of things planned out. I think curiosity, as far as research and making a project or even not, that's one thing I've really learned, is to let the curiosity guide what you're doing, what I've done, because I've learned a lot more than I ever thought I would. I thought maybe I'd learn a little bit about my topic, maybe I'd learn a little bit about a competition or how to make a documentary, but I've learned a lot about myself and how I research and work under timelines, and I can apply that to a lot of things in the future or now as I'm entering high school. But yeah, I don't know, doing something that you're interested in, that you feel some sense of reward, whether physical or just kind of mentally, because I like having something that I can look back on and say, hey, I made that, I did that, and remember the frustration of not being able to find the image that I wanted, but having it turn out as a pretty cool thing in the end.
Do you have plans for your future? Do you have, like, career goals or anything like that?
I don't know. I think I know that I really enjoy making documentaries or projects based on things that I've researched, and being able to use different parts to write in a way that you can convey certain ideas and let people think. One thing that I did in this documentary, which I did not last year, was I was able to really use questions as far as not only informing on a subject, but also helping people question a subject and come up with their own opinions, which is something I really enjoy. And I'm not really sure how I'll be able to use that in the future, but it's just a very interesting thing that I enjoy, figuring out a good craft of how to have the different parts kind of come together and help people think, I guess.
Sita Schumann, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate this too. It's fun.
Korea, always in a struggle of conflict and compromise, to make amends and accept unity or live as a divided state. A mere century ago, Korea was one country with one people, united in culture, language, and history. But today, the Korean Peninsula holds two of the world's most powerful nations, both diverging further from their shared origins every day. Is there any hope of restoring the harmony that was once a common thread? Or has it been ripped apart so many times that peace is unimaginable? Compromises involving the Korean Peninsula thrust proponents of communism and capitalism into a global conflict in 1950, known as the Korean War. Two diametrically opposed countries emerged from this Cold War hostility, creating one of the most volatile threats to global peace today. Before the 20th century, Korea was an independent country, but in 1910 it was annexed into the large Imperial Society of Japan. Throughout Japanese rule, Korea maintained its original culture, but when World War II began, it was forced into both physical and cultural separation. The story of this separation begins far from the Korean Peninsula. At the beginning of the 20th century, the Tsarist autocracy that had ruled Russia for over 300 years gave way to a new philosophy, communism. By 1924, Russia had transformed into Stalin's Soviet Union, a strong force that seemed invincible. As the Soviet Union expanded, so did communism. The new ideology spread like wildfire across the globe, but a belief of communal ownership was in direct opposition to another well-established notion, capitalism. Where communism said that everyone would be happier if the people had equal wealth, status, and power, capitalism said that competition drives individuals to reach their fullest potential, that one must work to gain status. No country held capitalism closer to its core than the United States, and as a result, the two global superpowers heavily disputed which idea would prevail. Both the United States and Soviet Union fought with the Allied forces against Japan in World War II, but the developing tensions were given a reprieve. After gaining victory in 1945, there was no common enemy upon which they focused their energies. Japan had to be divided into administrative districts, Korea being of largest dispute. During World War II, the Soviets had come into the Korean Peninsula, but the United States wanted to prevent Soviet expansion into Korea and China. Eventually, both sides agreed to form the original compromise, a border between North and South Korea. This line marks the first modern division of Korea, the first compromise between the United States and Soviet Union, from which a much larger conflict was created. This line was always meant to disappear and for Korea to reunite. This line is the 38th parallel. In the years following, skirmishes on the border between North and South Korea became a common occurrence, but the nations were all too hesitant to get involved. These small encounters could easily be ignored, and the world did not need another war.
We were tired of war. Korea was an afterthought as far as most American people were concerned.
By June 25, 1950, what began as a peaceful compromise had grown into a conflict that could no longer be overlooked. Those on the front lines, such as George Tate, experienced this escalation firsthand.
Well, you start losing people. It's war. It's not a conflict anymore.
Because of America's stance to fight against communism, Truman saw this as a direct attack.
On Sunday, June 25th, communist forces attacked the Republic of Korea. This attack has made it clear beyond all doubt that the international communist movement is willing to use armed invasion to conquer independent nations.
Although the United States was tired of war and fighting, we were thrust into yet another conflict. Ideological commitments forced action. However, shortly after the initial launch, the military efforts in Korea spiraled downward in a failure of devastating proportions. By August of 1950, the Republic of Korea Army, or ROKA, had almost lost the entire peninsula. ROKA was pushed back to the very tip of Korea, to an area known as the Busan Perimeter. ROKA barely had enough supplies to last much longer. The morale of both the American government and Roca troops was waning, and the conditions of Korea were insufferable.
I never did fully understand why we were over there. That's me. I didn't understand. Why are we here? What are we accomplishing? Nothing. I couldn't see any victory in sight. But somebody did, I guess.
How much longer could the Republic of Korea Army last? Just when all hope was about to be lost, a new proposition came from American General Douglas MacArthur.
MacArthur had this very bold idea of going around and invading through Incheon, which was quite risky.
These risks included battling unpredictable tides and navigating small islands, with Incheon port close to major North Korean bases. South Korea and her allies clung to the hope that maybe recovery was possible. Eventually, MacArthur's plan was approved and preparation commenced. On September 15, 1950, the operation was set into motion. Roca proceeded to the mainland from a nearby island, covered by the light of dawn. Using surprise to their advantage, Roca severed North Korean supply lines and was able to retake the capital of Seoul. Soon, Roca advanced beyond the 38th parallel, pushing farther and farther into communist territory. But as the Chinese-Korean border was just within grasp, a new force impeded their passage. The Chinese had come to aid the North Korean army. By January of 1951, the NKPA had control over Seoul. Over the next 2 years, both Roca and the NKPA would push to one side of the parallel or the other, neither gaining much leverage. By 1953, progress seemed futile. Talk of an armistice would often surface. However, the proposal would fade when one side or the other failed to comply.
It was very difficult for anybody to give on this, to say, you know, that we've actually lost or we've actually won. Neither side was willing to sort of compromise on that. So instead, it's just a ceasefire, right? We've stopped fighting.
Although neither side wanted to admit defeat, both North and South Korea did lose something. Neither side got the unified peninsula that was originally intended.
We weren't winning, we weren't particularly losing, so now's the time to depart.
Each side had more to gain and created another compromise, almost exactly the same as the original division.
Uneasy peace, but peace with all, came to Korea in 1953. The end of 3 years of bitter conflict and the end of bondage for prisoners of the Reds. What lay ahead, no one could foretell at year's end, but for these men, at least, the shadow of death had lifted.
On July 27, 1953, the agreement went through. Both sides would cease fire and withdraw to a position of 2 kilometers from the border, but North and South Korea are technically still at war. The demilitarized zone between the two stands as a symbol of the compromise, but perhaps truly represents the conflict that never ended. The border between North and South Korea is one of the most heavily militarized areas in the world, guarded every hour of every day of every year. The event that seemingly faded into the ongoing narrative of history still impacts our global political structure today. The compromise created the conflict, created a nuclear nation that could burst at any second and launch our world into the worst war we have ever seen. North Korea has access to the most powerful weapons in history because of alliances that have long since ceased. North Korea is an isolated military superpower dominated by communist totalitarianism, while South Korea has one of the most successful economies in the world, relishing in the freedoms of democracy and capitalism. When the two marched together in the 2018 Olympics, the event understandably made global headlines, but only 100 years ago this unity would have been entirely normal. Have we created an irreversible conflict, or have we finally reached a lasting compromise? How could such little time have such massive impact? How can events so far in history shape every moment of our future? To divide Korea is to define Korea through the endless cycle of compromise and conflict.
Thank you.
That was our interview with Bozeman High School freshman Seda Schumann on how she produced her award-winning documentary, Defining Korea, How Conflict and Compromise Shaped a Nation, the audio of which we just heard. To view the video, find the link at Echotones on the kgvm.org website to view it for yourselves. Or just go to YouTube and type in Seda Schumann, that's spelled S-A-D-A-S-C-H-U-M-A-N-N. I assure you, it is well worth the effort. We hope you have enjoyed this inaugural edition of Echotones, a program that focuses on interesting people, groups, organizations, and communities in Gallatin Valley. Echotones is a Beyond the Deep End production, produced by Joy LeClaire in Bozeman, Montana, for broadcast on community radio station KGVM, Gallatin Valley Community Radio, 95.9 FM on the radio dial. KGVM receives no university, government, or large corporate sponsorship. We depend entirely on the generosity of our listeners to maintain Gallatin Valley Community Radio. So please go to the website, kgvm.org, and click on the red and gold donate button at the top of the page. We appreciate your support, and we thank you for listening. Till next time, this is Joy LeClaire, signing out for now.